This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Is Sky Blues Extra.
Hello and welcome to the Sky Blues Extra podcast in association with the Sky Blue Tavern and Dillon's Brewery. My name's Tom Ward and pleased to be joined this evening by Matt. How you doing, mate?
All good, mate. All good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, to be fair. It's Tuesday. I've sort of got over it a little bit.
You grief than I am, aren't you?
Sounds like it, yeah, from what we were saying before we came on, but yeah, I mean, unbelievable day, really, wasn't it? What's your overriding feeling?
Yeah, I mean, just proud, really. And I said, coming away from the ground, I didn't even feel that disappointed at all after the game, just because I was so proud. And obviously, it's settled in a lot more since over the last couple of days. So I'm still working my way over it, if I'm completely honest. But I think the main thing that will always stick will be just, you know, being proud. Obviously, when we kind of look back on this game in the weeks and months and in period of time to come, we're just going to largely be proud, right? Do you feel the same?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I tweeted after the game saying, like, pride was like the overriding feeling for me. Yeah, I mean, like, obviously we met up in Box Park before and we said, you know, probably, you know, didn't give ourselves too much of a chance anyway. Yeah. And I thought, yeah, I mean, that second half performance was just unbelievable. Just to dig in that deep to get that game back. I mean, I don't think anyone gave us a hope at 3-0, did they?
Not many people would have given us a hope, like you say, before kickoff. So at 3-0, everybody's just, I was listening to, kind of switched into the Gary Lineker podcast, and he's saying he turned it over when it went to 3-0 and he kind of switched back at 3-2 and, you know, you can't really blame him. I would have thought most people would have thought, okay, this is done and dusted. Yeah. Premier League team against Championship team. There's no real interest in it, but it obviously proved to be an unbelievable finish. And yeah, so close.
The timing of the goals as well, I thought, was the mad thing, really, because to be 2-0 down before half time, it felt like, oh, well, that's game over then. You know,
yeah.
Whenever you go 2-0 down, you sort of feel like, I remember at Southampton, you felt the same kind of feeling. It's like, oh, well, game over. And then it's like, then you have half time and you think, well, you know, if we can get one back, then maybe. But then they go and get the third and you think, okay, right. Like, you know, this, it feels like game can go in two directions, doesn't it? Either we get one back and then it's like game on, or they get one and kill it. So even then it was like, oh, no, they've actually kind of killed it. But obviously it wasn't to be. It's just mad.
You start breaking it down in chunks of time, don't you? As you say, the second goal going in just before half time, it kind of kills you going into that half time period. But then you start thinking, okay, if you can get one in the first, 20 minutes, and then you've got another 20, 25 minutes to get an equaliser, and you're thinking, okay, that's not realistically likely to happen, but it could happen. And as you say, that third goal came at a point where it just felt like it was going to completely kill that off, but it didn't. We obviously gave it a really good go still from 3-0 down, and just pride more than anything else.
Yeah, we'll obviously get more into the weeds of the game in a minute. Just before we do that, just want to give a quick shout out to the Season Ticket Fund fundraiser, which is set up by Simon Miller. He does it every year. So a brilliant fundraiser this. Gives an opportunity for families across Coventry to get to see the Sky Blues, who perhaps wouldn't otherwise be able to do that. We did put a link out on our socials last week or the week before, but we'll put it out again this week. So if you are able to, then please do donate to that fund. That's a brilliant fundraiser organised by Simon. Let's get into it, Matt. Obviously, talk about the pre-match atmosphere, I think, first of all. That was obviously incredibly special. Obviously, we were in Box Park, which I thought was actually a brilliant setup before kickoff. Really sort of ramped up the atmosphere. Good to see a lot of people in there. Obviously, all the flags everywhere and everything like that. So a really sort of good, pre-match atmosphere. Obviously, Wembley Way as well. It was really building up, wasn't it, to the big game?
Yeah, it was wild. I know they try and set things up to keep fans apart as best as possible. But obviously, when you're going down Wembley Way, you're going to have that mix. But it still felt as though it was overwhelmingly Cov as well. You're walking down Wembley Way, you're thinking, OK, there's 36,000 from both sets of fans here. But it just felt like this was overwhelmingly Cov. Again, I know people are coming in from different areas, so I get that's probably not a completely true reflection, but it was still quite shocking. It just felt kind of like a Coventry City party again. Even when you're talking about games we played against maybe Oxford and League Two playoff, and you kind of go, and we're a bigger team, I guess, historically than those sides, and bigger cities, bigger fan bases, you're kind of thinking, okay, you maybe understand it, but this is Manchester United. And like I say, it's probably a little bit unrealistic because of the way it's all set up, but it's, as an experience, it's unbelievable. You're walking down there and it felt completely like a wave of Sky Blue. And and obviously pre-game with the songs and everything. Again, it's just a testament to what's happened since Doug King's come in. And I guess getting those little things right, those little touches right, will feel like a little touch, but just kind of ingratiating us with a particular song and the difference it can make to the atmosphere. I kind of, one of the things that hit me in the aftermath when I've been on my downward spiral, I guess, over the last couple of days, is realizing when they play Country Road for Man United winning, is they'd have played We Live and Die after we won, right? And that would have been just unreal, really, when you think about it. It is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, no, it was good on Wembley Way, and like you say, it did feel like it was a lot of Cov. And I think, I don't know, I just feel like everyone's just so proud to like wear the shirt and the colours, and it just like completely different football club, isn't it, to a few years ago? You know, I know like United don't like, well, they sort of always take pride in, they don't always wear like replica shirts and stuff to games, but it's just a bit of a sign of like how special it was for us, and you know, staying in the stadium at the end and waving the flags. I just felt like everyone was so proud to be like behind the club on the day. And I know it's not special for them. They're there, you know, year in, year out. They probably have a different set of fans there every year. That's the other thing, isn't it? You know, it's probably a different 36,000 people every year. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually.
A bit different for us, I suppose. But no, it was great to see on Wembley Way before the game. Obviously, team news came out. What did you make of, obviously, the way we set up? You know, a few sort of eyebrows raised about how we might set up, obviously. It was key to sort of try and contain them as much as possible, wasn't it, in the first half? Were you sort of happy with the way we set up?
Yeah, I mean, the side, I assume most people were relatively happy with it. It's what kind of most people would have assumed we would have played. I understand the way that we set up. People are going to say, there's common misconceptions, isn't there? People who kind of look at memes about Man United or Twitter posts or whatever else, and people like, you know, Harry Maguire, obviously, he's under such a microscope, and you have this thing, they've got a lot of players bought for 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 million pounds. Those players, if you don't live up to being an 80 million pound player, which is a lot to live up to, you're going to get ridiculed. Even if you say, well, maybe he's not an 80 million pound player, but he's still an international level player. He's still a top level Premier League player. And that goes for a few of their players as well. So it's one of them. People maybe I spoke to a lot of people, and it was shocking me how many people just thought, well, we're going to do them. And it was just, I could see the pure confidence in their eyes. And I felt like, I wish I could bottle up a little bit what you've got, because I didn't feel the same. As you say, we spoke in Box Park, and I was relatively confident we weren't going to come away with the results. So I understand the way that we set up, but it probably showed in the second half, obviously, what we could do if we went a different way with it. But it is understandable for us to set up the way that we started. But it obviously didn't kind of go the way that we wanted. You always run that risk. You try and keep it tight, and then you concede a goal. The pressure starts to get on you, because you know at some point then you're going to have to come out and get yourself back into the game. And it's kind of a little bit stick and twist. And then you always run the risk of getting caught out, and you're obviously not playing the formation that you want to potentially go and get yourself another goal. So, but yeah, how did you feel? Because obviously I assumed when the lineup, I don't know, maybe a little bit naively, when the lineup came out, I thought it would be a back four. And I thought we probably would just say, let's give it a go. But it was quite clear from the off that wasn't going to be the case. Is that what you, yeah, were you the same? Did you think we actually probably would revert back to that three centre half setup?
I initially thought we'd go with the back four, but you know, I think I can kind of understand why we did that, because I thought it was a case of trying to contain them as much as possible. And again, like, I suppose it was like, we can always revert and go at them if we need to. I think the plan was just to contain it as much as we can. And like, even if, you know, obviously you end up being 2-0 down at halftime, but I think the plan was like, you know, if we're 1-0 down at halftime, it's not the end of the world. We knew that we'd get chances. We knew that we could go at them and that they had some weaknesses at the back. So I think we got it about right. And when you actually look at the goals we did concede, I don't think they were too bad of goals to concede, if I'm honest. I mean, the first one is just a quality goal, isn't it? The run from McTominay is just like absolutely world-class, and the ball in is just absolutely perfect. So I don't think you could do much about that, to be honest. So, I thought in the early exchanges, I thought we actually contained them quite well. They were sort of struggling to break through, I thought. And it wasn't like there were balls like, you know, flying across our box and like, you know, sort of heart in mouth moments. I felt pretty relaxed the first kind of half an hour or so. How did you feel?
Yeah, when they got out wide, I didn't feel too bad. They didn't look too threatening out wide, in my opinion, until they got the goal, which obviously came from that area of the pitch. It felt like there was a little bit more of a risk when they were playing balls over the top, which is a bit surprising when you've got a back three. You think that's what you're going to be able to negate a bit easier, but they did seem to be able to float these balls with a bit more height on them, and they were getting knockdowns, and they were getting runners in behind, and it was just maybe falling out of their reach, or Collins reacted well, I think, on a couple of occasions to negate an opportunity, and we managed to get a toe in. It felt like that's where they were maybe a little bit more of a threat, those balls over the top with runners in, with a little bit more of a loft on them from kind of deeper positions, which is a little bit surprising. But I agree with you, when it comes to when they're out wide, I didn't feel too threatened in the early stages. But obviously, as you say, I guess when you've got a team like this, and it's where the quality shows, you get into those positions on the pitch so regularly, there's always going to be that opportunity that you're going to get at least one moment of quality with a ball into the box. And obviously that's what ultimately happened.
Yeah, and it all just happened so quickly, didn't that first goal? That overlap was just like lightning fast, wasn't it? It was just so quick. And then the ball comes in, and it's, like I said, it's a really good run. And yeah, not too much you could do about that. One really, I think. And obviously the second one, outswinging corner, and Maguire just sort of gets up really above everyone. He's a big lad, isn't he? Gets up, get his headers kind of perfect really. And yeah,
I was worried about the threat that he was going to possess from a corner, because again, that clearly is an element of his game and his ability to create a bit of space. And obviously we're going to have defensive minded players on, they're more attacking minded players. And I was a little bit nervous about the fact that, you know, he's obviously somebody who's shown, whether it be for Man United or for England, that he is a threat from those situations. When the ball drops to him, you watch the replay from the reverse angle, as soon as it leaves his head, he's not even looking at the ball. He's away and gone, because he just knows the connection's there. And it's still not easy. He's still got to plant a firm header on it and have that right kind of little bit of curl into the corner. And, you know, it's not particularly central, it's kind of right in at the post. And yeah, he's a threat. We had a couple of you know, group bets on the way down, and he's one that I kind of said, well, that maybe not necessarily even set a goal, but I'm pretty certain there's going to be a header on target from him during the game, and obviously, yeah, unfortunately, it proved to be the case. So, but as you say, I mean, I think it's Ellis Sims, isn't it, who's trying to pick him up, and it's just a little smart nudge away from Maguire to create himself a little bit of space, and then he's in, I guess, that second wave of players, isn't he, behind, you know, the ones who are really in on goal. And he's if you give a player that ability in those situations, that opportunity, majority of the time he's going to score.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, at the time it was a bit of a sort of sinking feeling, really, because you thought, yeah, not a great time to concede the second goal. And I think the atmosphere went a little bit flat, which is completely understandable. It's, you know, it's just a little bit of a, not a shock to the system at all, but it's just a bit like, you know, it takes the wind out of your sails a little bit from all the excitement that's got built up to the game. Obviously, half time comes, switch things around a little bit, switch the formation to sort of have a go at them. And I mean, that's just, you know, what we had to do at that point, wasn't it? There was nothing at that point to lose in the game. Mm. I think we just had to really have a go at that point, didn't we? And I actually thought, even before their third, which, you know, at the time felt like it killed the game off, I thought we started to play some good stuff and started to push forwards, and we actually looked the more likely to get that you know, what should have been the crucial goal in the game.
Yeah, a lot of people might say, you talk about the formation at the start of the game, and you'll think, what happened, obviously, from the 70th minute onwards proves that we should have completely gone for it. But from the start, I should say, but you've got to take the actual context of the game into account, haven't you? You know, they play a much different game at 2-0 up to what they'd be playing at 0-0. And if we were playing that way from the start, then they're obviously going to be able to pick a lot more holes, whereas, let's say, from the 60th minute on, or certainly when they go 3-0 up, they're not really trying to do that. They're just trying to see out the game. So there's an opportunity there for us, but they're thinking, well, sit back, keep it tight, we're not going to concede three goals here. So
I think it's weird, I feel like when if we were playing like we play Preston at home, we're 3-0 down, right? I don't give us a single hope. It's like, even when we're 1-0 down to a team in our league or 2-0 down, I'm just like, it becomes such a frustrating game to watch, and there's so much time wasting and stuff. And I don't know, were United just not like, are they not as into the dark arts of just really frustrating it? Do you know what I mean? Like, how could they not just frustrate the hell out of us and just slow
maybe
the game
a little
down?
Bit of arrogance,
mad,
in
it?
There, right?
Yeah.
It's possibly a little bit of arrogance, expectation. You know, they're at that point, they're thinking this is done and dusted. And you, from a fan's perspective, you can maybe say, yeah, I felt the same. But from a professional perspective, it's probably very indicative of what is wrong at that football club at the minute. They've done the job that they needed to do, but they, as professionals, they should still see it through. And I mean, it's quite funny, you listen to a lot of the reaction afterwards, you hear a lot of these reactions coming from people who would never usually be talking about Coventry City, and the way they talk, it's as if a championship club is a bunch of amateurs who can barely kick a ball five yards forward to the next person, right? It's funny though, isn't it? That's how it is. These people who kind of have no concept of what the championship is, that nothing exists past Premier League and Champions League, really. And they're kind of, you've done this 3-0, you've allowed a championship team to come back from 3-0 down, and it's almost as if they expect these players to be, you know, 45 years old with a beer gut, like they're playing Sunday League or something. So, but it's almost not quite to that level, but it's almost as if maybe Man United had an element of that kind of thinking to a less extreme fashion. They think this is easy, I guess. And they've allowed a lot of complacency to creep into their game. They have got a number of players with just the wrong attitude, maybe the right abilities, but the wrong attitude. And you certainly saw that from 70 minutes onwards. So I know what you're saying. You play against the Preston, you go 3-0 down, you just think they're not going to give you anything. They've got what they come for, but they, you know, they know what could happen quite quickly in this game as well, and they're just going to keep going. They had a game plan and they've executed it perfectly, versus Man United, who think this is done and dusted, and a lot of arrogance creeps in. And when that first goal went in, I don't know, when it initially went in, I kind of turned to my friend and, okay, well, it's nice to get a goal. And then you start looking at the clock and you start going, okay, right, we've got, 20 minutes. You're thinking, if we can get another one before 80, you kind of start chopping it up into little periods of time, don't you? Think, okay, give ourselves 10 minutes of normal time, maybe a little bit of extra time, and we might have a chance to get a third if we can get that second. And but I mean, being completely honest, I wasn't too hopeful still at 3-1, but that changed a lot with the second goal.
Yeah, exactly. It's just weird how it can suddenly, like you say, just suddenly switch. That first goal back was just, well, I wouldn't say out of nowhere, but it was, you know, I'd sort of resign myself to a defeat and, you know, hoped that we wouldn't get absolutely trounced like 6 or 7 nil at that point.
Funny, was it our first shot on target, the Sims one?
Possibly. Yeah, I can't really think of too many chances. I mean, we had a whole load, didn't we, towards the end. But yeah, I can't think of too many before that. So yeah, it's sort of, I guess you could say it came out of nowhere, really. We were playing really well, but yeah, that sort of really kind of changed things, really got the crowd up. And it was like, oh, actually, we even said, like, you know, I hope we score a goal today. And it was like, oh, we've got our goal. That's quite nice to see. But then it was like, actually, hang on a minute, we've got 20, 25 minutes left here. You know, let's have a real go at them, and if you get another one, it's gonna be really nervy. But
I think they had the right attitude as well. They didn't panic. I just think they thought after getting that first goal, it maybe was a case of, okay, right, let's just try and get another one and put the pressure on. As you say, had the right mentality around it. If you can get another one now, that puts the pressure on. Versus, yeah. I know it sounds silly, but even the right mentality of thinking, okay, well, we still need two goals. There's a mountain to climb. We've got to throw everything at it. I think maybe they just kind of thought, okay, if we can get another one, we've still got a good amount of time, and it just puts that pressure on. Even if that comes in the 90th minute and you have, you know, extra time to try and see what might happen. So they didn't seem to panic. They didn't seem to lump everybody forward. They still had a kind of game plan of how they might get another goal to get back into the game. And, you know, it obviously was the right one in the end.
Yeah. And I have to mention the subs as well, because I thought, I mean, as subs go, I can't think of three or four players that have made as big an impact as these lads did on Sunday. Yeah. Obviously, Tort, Binks and Tavares in a triple change, wasn't it, for Latti, Kitching and Eccles. And I thought all three of them had brilliant games. And obviously then De Silva a bit later on came on, and he was absolutely brilliant as well. I mean, every single touch was just perfect. There were the amount of times that the ball would go out to him, and I was almost expecting him to miss one, or, you know, something would happen, but every single one was just perfect. And some of the football we were playing was unbelievable. But yeah, I mean, the subs just made such a difference, didn't they, in that second half?
Yeah, they really stepped up. Tavares, obviously, he did have an opportunity. We obviously changed the way that we set up, and they probably allowed us to come onto them a bit, thinking they had the game won. So it was an opportunity for him, but he got his head down, got into those good positions, getting into positions that we weren't really getting into in the first half, and really looking like a threat. It's obviously a really good assist for the first goal from him as well. But obviously, yeah, picking up on the other players you mentioned, Torp just looked quality. Just, again, it's great to get another sign of the player that he is and can be for us, the option that he can potentially be, because you see a player who could have a really big future for us, and it's great to see. He looks composed as well, coming into that environment, still a young lad and still not very much experience of the game in this country, and came on in that environment, that situation, and looked at home, looked composed, didn't look overawed, looked more than a match for what he was coming up against. So that was really impressive. I think Binks, one of the things with Binks was it was his attitude coming on, right? He just seemed to have that attitude, that spirit, that fight, that battle. And it was really enjoyable and pleasant to see. I mean, I will hold my hands up and say he's somebody I would have quite happily seen, and very likely this will still happen, but quite happily seen his loan kind of run out and thanks for the season and see you later. And he provided a nice bit of cover, but, you know, thanks for the memories and we'll see you later. But Sunday was the game really where I thought, well, hold on, maybe there is some kind of conversation to what we might want to do with him. And it was more his attitude and his application coming onto that pitch than anything else, because he just looked like he had the bit between his teeth. And it sounds obvious. You think, well, you should do in that kind of environment, but it's easier said than done. And I was really impressed by what he did, and echo what you say about De Silva. He just looked, again, it was important. Obviously, we didn't really put a foot wrong if we were going to come back into the game in that situation. And he looked like a threat, but he looked composed when it came to his defensive responsibilities as well. So it bodes well, doesn't it? Obviously, we're talking about four players that we're able to bring on, all looking quality. And obviously, we haven't got the biggest squad at the minute, but we still know that we can bring quality onto the pitch. And Godden came on as well and, you know, made some nice runs and he impacted... or he was involved, I guess, in the phantom goal, we should say. But yeah, it was good to see that we do have those players. You can come into that environment and have an effect.
Yeah, Binks is an interesting one, isn't he? I mean, he's so passionate for the club as well. I mean, you saw him celebrating the goal that we thought was the winner. You know, he's just celebrating like he played it for 10 years. Do you know what I mean? And he's only a loan player. But I think he's one of those where he's probably never had a club that he can call home. You know, he's been on loans abroad and probably ultimately wants to play in England in the Championship or the Premier League like most English players do. And probably the most he's felt at home at a club so far. Be interested to see what happens in the summer. Obviously,
what do you think will happen?
Well, from what I've heard, he's on quite high wages, isn't he? And I don't know if we're just paying half of that, which is like a normal Championship wage for us to pay. Whether it be quite a lot. But then again, you know, if he wants to play in the Championship, he might have to consider his options and, you know, maybe he has to take a pay cut to get into the Championship to then work his way up to the Premier League and then he gets back to where he was before or whatever it is. So, I don't know. I think it'll be an interesting one. I mean, if the wages were right and the fee was right, I think he's a great option to have. I really do. And I want us to have good... backup options for next season. I think if we're going to mount a proper challenge, it's going to be really important to do that, not just to have bodging players in. Or I don't mind loan players, but the more permanent players we can have in the building, the better for our future. So
absolutely,
we'll see what happens with Binks. But whilst we were talking about Sims's goal was a brilliant technique, wasn't it? Thought he did really well the way he let it bounce before he hit it. And obviously, it sort of came off his shin, didn't it, actually, in the end? But brilliant technique. And obviously, he's just absolutely on fire at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, it's all about body position with that goal. The way that he's angling his body, he's getting his knee over the ball, positioning of his leg. And that's what allows him not to get the connection off his foot that he's obviously going to be aiming for, but still find the back of the net because he's got all of those things right. And that's what allows you to maybe not have the ball come off the right part of your leg, but still see it fly into the back of the goal. So people will say, well, it's fortunate, but it's not a fortunate goal because so much of what that is about technique, body positioning, and controlling the ball, making sure it stays down. He's still got to do all of that. So it's a fantastic goal. Showed, again, his composure in that situation, continued to show the kind of player that he could be for us. So, yeah, it was really nice to see him get on the score sheet. Yeah. And I think all of these experiences, again, one of the things that concerned me with him, obviously when he got that goal against Bristol City and he had his little moment, and I'm sure that was, you know, aimed at a particular element of the fan base or whatever it might be have been. But he does feel like a player who maybe will benefit from, kind of similar to what you said with Binks, all those experiences to make him feel even more a part of the team, a part of the area. And obviously it's another one which will hopefully help to do that for him, because we can see now the unbelievable talent that's there in him as a player. So we're obviously hoping that we can benefit from that for a long period of time. And it's good for these players to have these kind of moments and obviously make them feel even more attached to the club.
Yeah, definitely. It's good to see him scoring different types of goals, isn't it? You know, headers, you know, like sort of almost half volleys like that, slotted ones. But the common theme being he's always seems to be in the right position. He's always getting himself in exactly the right position. His movement's been absolutely class. So, yeah, really pleased for Sims. And again, will be another big player for us next season if he can get off to a strong start in the league. I mean, is he on is it 19 goals he's on now in all competitions?
19.
I mean, to have two players probably going to finish on 20 goals. I can't really remember the last time we had that. Probably since maybe Leon Clark and Callum Wilson. I can't remember. But, you know, that's going to be huge for us next season if we can get that again.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. And then obviously the 3-2 goal. Nice little breakaway. Van Ivek got the ball at Sims. He passed it to Callum O'Hare. And it was a bit of a speculative shot, really, wasn't it? You know, so I don't know, quite couldn't quite work out where it was going to go if it hadn't come off Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah.
Weird one, just completely loops into the net. I don't think anyone was, you see the fans behind the goal when you watch it back, no one was like, no one was getting anywhere close to celebrating that, were they?
Yeah.
And then it's in the net and there's like almost a delayed reaction to celebrating it. Weird goal, but you know, you've got to, that's why you've got to take those shots sometimes, because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and we know O'Hare's not afraid to take those shots, and obviously, as you say, it's paid off. I've tried to watch it back to see where I thought it might have gone. And then somebody posted the reaction from CWR, and I think they seemed to pretty much just guarantee it was going in anyway. So it was definitely a goal. And I'm kind of like, that might be a bit dubious. It looks like it might be heading kind of straight down Onana's throat. So yeah, you never know. Probably a little bit of bend on it might have taken it towards the other corner as well. But as you say, it felt like as soon as it kind of deflected off, I think everybody was just preparing themselves for the corner. I was probably in as good a position to get an idea of what might happen because I was kind of side on to it.
Yeah.
So you could kind of get an idea of where it was going to bounce down. But I think we'd pretty much, yeah, just, okay, right, here's a corner, here's another opportunity. And then it just seemed to drop down. It feels almost like fate to be able to drop down at that angle and still kind of beat the post and the, the crossbar and find its way in. So, yeah, like you say, you're going to get those kind of goals. And I mean, let's have a look at talk about their third goal. There's a little bit of fortune in that, and it's not a great finish and it's not brilliant from us. So, you know, their first two goals maybe were decent goals, but their third one's certainly not a particularly great one. And this one here, yeah, there's definitely an element of fortune to it, but we're a championship club against the top six Premier League club. You can't really hope to, I guess, have those kind of comebacks without a little bit of fortune, as you say. So, so yeah, nice moment. And that, obviously, that moment coming as well when it did, you kind of get those second goal in that situation, but you might do it in the 92nd minute and you kind of go in, okay, well, he's just one more, but realistically, what's going to happen here? But that came with a good 10 minute plus extra time. And I will say, even as much as I felt at 3-1, okay, that's probably a consolation. When that goes in at 3-2, I really did start to think there's something in this that, you know, at that point as well, the growing weight of pressure, we just felt like we were able to kind of to play our way through them. And I certainly felt, even if the third goal doesn't come, there's going to be opportunities. There's going to be, at the very least, near misses. We're going to force Onana into some saves. And yeah, so that for me is obviously the moment where things started to change and you felt this is almost destiny, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. And then we did start to pile it on then, didn't we, at that point? Mm. Obviously, Torp had that chance in, I think it was the 84th minute. Which got a really good save out of Onana, and I thought, oh, was that the moment gone? But yeah, that was a really good chance. And then obviously then the equaliser, 92nd minute. I thought it was a really good bit of play by Torp, actually. Sort of sorted his feet out very quickly to get around the player. Passed it to Hadji, and again, sort of reminded me of the Wolves goal, the header from Sims for the equaliser. Just that he's good at dinking that ball in, sort of hanging it up in the box, and it causes a bit of havoc whether someone gets the head on the end, or I think it was Binks who tries to put it across the box again, and obviously gets a handball out of Wan-Bissaka. But those balls from Hadji are really good, and they do cause havoc at the back. Obviously hits his hand. Some people saying that it was a harsh decision, but I don't know. I think his arms were kind of out and they were coming back down. So for me, I think when you're a defender with your arms out like that, you're always in a bit of a dodgy position. So I think, obviously VAR looked at it as well. Obviously it stood, and then obviously Hadji's penalty. I mean, how did you feel sort of waiting for him to step up to that?
Yeah, I it's nothing
you
to
must
do
have found
with
Hadji, surely.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, it's nothing to do with Hadji. I guess you just got that natural inclination to think.
Oh, of course, yeah.
We can't have this happen, right? We can't have something this amazing happen for us, and you just be Coventry City's look for us to get back to 3-2 and get a penalty and then miss the bloody penalty. You know, you start allowing yourself to think like that. But it was so calmly taken, so well taken. He obviously didn't put it down the middle, but he put good pace on it, but obviously made sure as well. I think that's a really important thing with Hadji. Maybe a little bit of the hangover with Southampton in his mind, I don't know, but those fine margins could be a bit of a killer. So yeah, I don't think it was an accident that it wasn't, let's say, going in to the side netting. I think he's just thought, let's make sure we get this on target, put it in there with pace, and you've got every chance.
You're listening to Sky Blues Extra.
What were you thinking, actually? I'd be interested to hear, with O'Hare getting the ball, did you immediately clock that was a little bit of a protection tactic, or do you think he was taking it? Because I thought he was taking it.
I thought he was taking it. Wow, I was just like, what's going on here? Like, why would O'Hare be taking it? Yeah. And I was like, I didn't want O'Hare to be taking it, to be honest with you. No, just because, like, Hadji's been a good penalty taking this. I know he missed the one at Southampton, but then again, yeah. I thought it's good timing that he's missed the one at Southampton, because, you know, he's not going to slip twice. Well, you know, I was hoping he's not going to slip twice in a couple of weeks. I think he was like checking his studs, wasn't he, and stuff, people were saying. But, yeah. I thought, I wasn't quite sure what was going on there. And then, I don't know, it turns out whether it was just like trying to mess with their heads a little bit. Did you see Cal sort of copying his run-up as well from behind? Did you see that video?
I didn't see that.
If you watch it back, yeah, from the angle from behind the goal, Cal sort of stands a few yards behind Hadji and completely copies his run-up.
Okay.
And like runs in as he takes it. So I don't know. Some people were saying, is it so he's ready for the follow-up, or is it to just play some mind games with Onana? But I don't know. Cal's a funny one, isn't he? He's just...
It's interesting, actually, when you think about it, because we did see from Onana... He was time wasting from very early on in the game. He's a very vocal player, and we saw during the penalties he was more than willing to try and get in the minds of the Coventry players coming up. So maybe they were aware of that, and that was a purposeful ploy to try and make them think, okay, O'Hare's the one to target here, and I guess avoid Wright having to deal with any of that, because as we saw, Onana wasn't shy of trying to play those mind games. So actually, the more you think about it, it's really impressive preparation, I guess, if that is the case, which you'd have to believe was the case, because otherwise, why is he stood there with the ball? So yeah, it's actually, the more you think about it, it's really quite impressive, and it shows the level of detail, doesn't it? Which is obviously only bodes well for us as a club overall.
Yeah, absolutely. And then obviously into extra time, not too much sort of happened in extra time, really, but there was obviously two massive chances, one for them with Bruno.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Fernandez hitting the bar in the first half, sort of hearts in mouth moment. Obviously at the far end, couldn't really see it that well. And then Sims in the second half of extra time. And that was, for me, that was the moment that I thought that was going in. I thought it was going to bounce over the line from the bar. Two big chances for either team to probably snatch it at that point. Very, very close.
Yeah, Fernandez is almost, I guess, possibly a blessing in disguise to not see that situation too well. Or I had a relatively decent view of it being on the side, but I don't think I had the time to kind of prepare myself with the fact that it was Fernandez. Because when you watch the replay back and you watch it slow motion from behind the angle of where he is, and you think about Fernandez, you just think that's set up for him perfectly, right? You know, as a player, that's the kind of situation you probably expect that he's likely to find the back of the net. So we've probably had a good bit of fortune there, because he's right on the edge of the area. He's got a good look at goal. he's got a good amount of time. The ball back to him is really nice. It's weighted quite well, so he can just come onto it and hit it first time. And actually, you probably think a player of his level probably should do better. But yeah, got away with one there. I think the thing that stands out to me with the Ellis Sims effort is the fact of, you look at that, the ball kind of drops to him and he's back to goal, but he's got, what is it, like three Man United defenders on his back. By all right, you should be thinking, okay, there isn't much to this. But I did, and maybe it's an indicative sign of how Sims has progressed. I thought he's going to make something happen here. You know, I was really confident that he was going to create some kind of opportunity. And he did. He did it really well. It wasn't an easy situation at all. Certainly, nobody can be saying he missed a sitter. He's created that opportunity, swiveled and hit a really nice shot. I think he tried to subtly get in that Onana has actually tipped it onto the bar. It's a bit, that might
don't
be a bit dubious.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's still a great effort, and he's great created effort, an opportunity himself. And like you say, that hit comes down off the bar, and I'm waiting for the whistle to go. I think surely that's got to have bounced over the line. And yeah, I was kind of back row, so we just had a wall behind us, and my arms are pretty sore today because that period, that second period of extra time, just banging that wall. There's the right opportunity, obviously, and the others that we've talked about. It just felt, but that second period of extra time, I don't know, it did just feel like they seemed to be gone, which was weird because obviously we'd done what we'd done in the last 20 minutes of the game. But as you say, the first half of extra time seemed to settle down a little bit and felt as almost as if they were exerting their what should be superior quality. And then that second period of extra time, it almost felt as if we would play, almost felt like a bit of a rope-a-dope type situation in the first period. We're like, you know, settle in, let them do what they're going to do. And then the second period again, it just felt like, it almost felt as if sooner or later we're destined to score because we were all over them. And I'm sure we're gonna now gonna move on to the moment that we thought we'd all done that, right?
Can't avoid it, unfortunately. Got to talk about that big moment at the end. What the listeners have all been waiting for on this podcast. I mean, obviously we'll just talk about the goal because it's, you know, in its own right it was a brilliant goal, only to be ruled out. But a really good ball through from Cal. So he sort of dinks it through to Hadji. Obviously, we've all seen the freeze frame about a million times over the last few days. Hadji just sort of slots it across the 6-yard box, and obviously Torp's just in exactly the right place to turn it into the goal. I think it's worth just talking about the scenes in the Coventry end, obviously, when that went in. I don't know, it was like where you were stood, but I mean, around me, it was just absolutely mental. Probably the best goal celebration I've ever experienced in my life. There was just like people crying their eyes out. There's grown men with their hands on their head crying their eyes out. Do you know what I mean? It was like just unbelievable emotions.
By grown men, do you mean yourself, Tom?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, me and all my mates around me, yeah. absolutely mad scenes. What was it like around
you? Because I was there with you, exactly the same, you know, tears in my eyes, bawling my eyes out.
It was just the shock of it all. It was like you just couldn't quite believe what you were watching.
It's amazing. I was saying this to my other half yesterday. It's amazing what emotion can do to you because there's just, I mean, the guy in front of me, I've grabbed his head. He's grabbing my head, like head to head, just screaming at each other. Never met this guy a day before in my life. But in that moment with that emotion, it doesn't matter, you know, and it just shows you what football, it really does show you, it sounds a bit cheesy and cliche or whatever, but it does show you what football can do, what emotion that can bring. But it just all, you'd never imagine doing that, just walking down the street, grabbing a stranger by the face and screaming at each other. But in that moment, it just, they felt like there was no other option of what you were going to do. And yeah, I kind of took a moment to take it all in and seeing some of the scenes of people around me, and it was just amazing. And it is weird because obviously it is negated by the fact of what happens in the end, but it does feel, I still feel kind of having that experience in itself anyway will still be something, I guess.
We
obviously wanted it to count, and we wanted it to lead to us winning the game and going through to Wembley, and obviously we're absolutely good that it's not happened. But I don't know. I'm still, going to take something from that experience in itself, even though it does hurt that it was ultimately negated by the fact that the goal was ruled out. But yeah, the scenes are just absolutely unreal. My memories go back to Premier League, and not beyond Premier League, but pretty much the start of the Premier League for me is when I became a Coventry fan as a young lad, and I've experienced a lot in that period of time. And yeah, I've not experienced anything like that. It's quite funny, you know. We've obviously won a couple of Wembley games, and we lost to Luton. And I think if we'd have beaten Luton last year, that would have been my number one all-time Cov game. But other than that, the first two Wembley days, as amazing as they were, I'd still say there were certain games that I would have put ahead of it, like the Notts County second leg, and maybe Man United back in the 90s and all that kind of stuff. But I don't even know how it would have been possible to have topped
that
game on Sunday all time if that had actually have stood. Where do you go from there in terms of topping that moment? I don't know. It would have been tough. And for 90 seconds, we actually still got to experience that. So look, it's not ideal. It's not what we would have wanted. And it matters that it was negated in the end. But yeah, what a moment it was to experience in itself.
Yeah, incredible, incredible moment. Obviously, the sort of celebrations calmed down, and it was that, I don't know how to describe it, for me it was just almost like a sickening feeling of like seeing it on the screen that they're checking the offside, and it's like,
did you that's a thought actually, did you have any moment before it became obvious on the screen of thinking about VAR?
No, absolutely not. Like, this is the thing that annoyed me about it. Like, I mean, I've always been obviously we don't have VAR in the Championship, so we maybe watch games slightly differently anyway as fans. But for me, I've always, you have goals where you look over at the linesman because you have a suspicion or it's close, right? And it's always been, if the flag's down, that's it. You can enjoy yourself. You can celebrate the goal and in the knowledge that it's not offside. And, you know, and so my natural instinct is to look over at the linesman, even though there is VAR, so they probably won't have the flag up anyway. But that wasn't one of those goals. That wasn't one of those. Mm. It wasn't like, I wasn't even thinking. I was like, that's a brilliant ball through. He's onside. I mean, I know we don't have the right angle to look at it, but it just didn't feel like there was anything to check. I think as well, it's because it wasn't like, there was almost like a second phase of play. Like, it wasn't like Hadji's the last man and then he scores the goal and he's the offside player. Yeah. It was like he'd got the ball. And then there was a little bit of a pause, like Hadji sort of slows it down, and then, you know, like he does, then he plays it across, then there's the goal. So it was like, I'd forgotten about the ball free by the time the goal went in, almost. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is the frustrating thing about VAR as well.
Exactly what you're saying. Yeah. It's weird. I asked because I've spoken to a few friends of, you know, fans of Premier League teams, and they were talking about the fact of, they do feel like pretty much any goal now they struggle to celebrate because they are thinking of VAR, and maybe it is a thing because we're not used to it because we don't have it in the Championship. Maybe it is a bit different. I would challenge them not to have celebrated in that moment, because I think you'd have been hard pressed to even be thinking about VAR at that moment. But you're 100% right. It didn't feel like there was, you have those goals, don't you, where you're thinking automatically. Yeah.
You're almost like guiltily look over and just be like, we've got away with it. Cool, I can celebrate. And
But it didn't feel like that at all. 100%. I remember the ball going through to right, and it almost felt like, what is he doing? It just felt like, I don't know. Again, this might be the moment which affects it, but it just felt like, what, he's taking so long. What's he doing? Yeah. It felt like when the ball dropped down to him, I thought he was just going to go towards goal and get a shot in. And it's testament to Hadji, right? Actually, he had that composure to kind of take it into a particular area and pick the right ball, but it just felt like it took so long. And as you say, there was another phase after the moment that was ultimately flagged for offside. So you kind of think you'd almost forgotten about that. And when you just see it go into the corner, I'm with you. There was no part of me which is thinking VAR at all. Until the screen pops up and then you go in, okay, well, this is...
Yeah. It's such a shame, though. Like, well, is it? What you just said about, you know, Premier League fans not celebrating goals properly, I think that's where we've lost sight of, like, what's important in football. And I don't see why... Where is this kind of like demand come from to get things so scientifically correct? I get and there's different types of decisions. Some decisions are black and white, blah, blah, blah. But things like offsides, I just think it needs to be reviewed, it needs to be looked at, because we've got to a point now where we're just like drawing these lines on and trying to like, you know, see if he's like half a centimeter offside. And it's like the offside rule was invented to stop goal hanging, right? That was the reason why that rule, to, you know, to make football what it is and not have people standing by the goal. It wasn't made so you couldn't make a run and be a centimeter offside. Do you know what I mean? And like, we've just lost sight of that now, and it's just getting absolutely ridiculous, in my opinion. And
this talk of clear and obvious error as well. People have said, been throwing the clear and obvious error thing in there. And I know people who say, I don't think that is the rule for offside. It's either a definitive yes or no. And you say, well, if that's the case, why? Because you can only really say that if it's something is definitive, right? If you're telling me they've got the technology, the science, whatever it is, to make a decision definitively yes or no, then that's where you can say, you know, obviously like the situation with goal line technology, that's a definitive yes or no because technology tells us what the answer is, and as long as the technology doesn't screw up, then we're good to go. People will say, oh well, the technology we've seen with VAR does screw up. It's the technology doesn't screw up, really. It's human use of and interpretation of that technology which has an effect. I think there is obviously the one occasion with that goal right back after COVID, Sheffield United Villa, where somebody forgot to turn something on or whatever, where you've had a one occasion of technological error, and that was still user error, I think. So unless you've got that 100% guarantee, technological, whatever it might be, guarantee, then there should be clear and obvious mistakes if you're going to have VAR and video replays in there. And that one, if you have got that, which you should, because it's 100% not an exact art, it would have stood, right? You're not going to overturn that situation because somebody's drawing a line across feet, and you know, everybody's talking about it looks like it's over Van Wan-Bissaka's leg or foot, sorry, and whatever else. So those are the things at the very least they need to iron out with this. But yeah, I think 99% of people now are just, you know, sack it up. I do get the other argument where if you're an official in a game, you have so much moaning from managers and club officials and fans and everything else, where you're kind of going, well, surely you want us to have whatever we can to make or have the opportunity to make the best decision. But you're getting that now anyway, right? It's not really helping any situation on that front.
It's like you say there, Matt. It's about how you use the technology. Like, have the technology as best as you can and as definitive as you can, but it's how you use it, how you apply it to the laws of the game. Like, would any United fans or players have complained if that goal was given? Would they genuinely have come out and gone, that was offside, we've been robbed here? I don't think they would have done. And for me, I just don't. I don't think you should be allowed to draw the lines on the pitch, because I just think it defeats the whole point of the rule of offside. If the flag's down, so the linesman has perceived it as offside, and obviously I know they play on now and then he puts it up, whatever, but his flag stays down after the goal goes in. So, okay, everyone on the pitch thinks it's onside. You then flick to the VAR, they watch one replay, we've all watched, and they can pause it or whatever for one replay. If they can't just see that it's offside from that replay, then that's it. It plays on. That should be the rule.
Yeah.
Why do you then have to go, no, we need to make sure, we need to get down to a centimetre level and check if this actually was offside? Doesn't make any sense to me. If you can't see it with your naked eye,
that's the balance.
It's onside for me.
That's the balance you need to strike with it, because as we say, it's not 100% technical science or not 100% technical guarantee of what they're doing is correct. Yeah. It's comfortably not 100%. So yeah, you need to realistically strike a balance. I know it maybe gives a bit of a grey area, but we've got a massive grey area at the minute. So we're heightened at the moment on this point, aren't we? Obviously, we're a bit biased on it at the moment, obviously, but it does feel, I think this is the thing that gets me, when you see the greatest FA comeback ever, almost, and you think the reason why it is almost and not greatest FA Cup comeback ever is because of that. It's really hard to take. Has there been another decision in the game that's been harder to take than that one for any club? I don't know. It's got to be up there. I might be missing something really obvious. And I'm a Coventry fan. I'm going to think that, but there's not going to be too many where you're saying that's that's as painful or as hard a decision to
no.
to take. And you'll obviously have Liverpool fans or maybe Man United fans talking about having it week in, week out. And we get it once in a blue moon, and it's done this to us. It's a pretty hard one to take.
Hard to take. It's hard to. I mean, heaven forbid we get into the Premier League. We'll probably have to add an extra half an hour onto each week's podcast just to talk about VAR and FFP and all the other stuff that goes on in the Premier League. But and then obviously we go into penalties, and it just, again, I had sort of a bit of a horrible feeling in my stomach, just obviously based on what happened last year in the playoffs, and the, you know, momentum swings are a thing in games, aren't they? And I just thought, this isn't going to be nice. And then we lose the two tosses again. I mean, I saw someone today on Twitter said that the chance of losing four tosses in a row is like 6%, something like that, 6% chance of that actually happening.
Yeah.
How the hell has that happened to us? But
I think it makes a massive difference as well. As soon as I saw that was happening, I was absolutely devastated. Added on to the weight of the fact that we've just had this crushing moment and you've got to tell our players to recover from that and go again and try and win it again. But you lose both of those coin flicks. And it might be a little bit of post-traumatic stress disorder from last year. But as soon as we lost both of those and I see them walking down that end and it's a Man United player going first, I'm pretty heartbroken. I'm like, this is not going to end well. Even when the first penalty was saved, I think it was quite telling how there wasn't as much of a reaction as you might expect to that save in our end. I think most people were kind of thinking the same thing. They didn't feel like, and I've watched it back now, and you look at they show the Cov end, I think, just after the penalty saved. And obviously people are happy, but people aren't going wild. You know, I think most people kind of felt almost as if there's a writing on the wall type situation here. But
I agree. It was almost like of this mental game that's gone on for 120 minutes, there's been so many twists and turns. It was like us saving the first penalty didn't mean anything. That's what it felt like. It was like, how stupid could you be to think, oh, well, we've got an advantage now and that'll be it. We'll just take our penalties, score them, and it'll be all plain sailing. It was like, of course there's going to be another twist in this game, like, do you know what I mean? If you've watched the other 120 minutes, but it obviously started well. Casemiro sort of went down the middle, didn't he, and Collins saved it well. It was interesting with Collins actually, because he kind of stayed central, I noticed, for a lot of the pens. And it's a funny psychology penalties, isn't it? Because it's like, supposedly as a goalkeeper, you know, you should always look like dive, because if you stand in the middle and it goes down the side, you look a bit silly. But then if you do stand in the middle, you might save two of them out of the five, because a lot of people go down the middle. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a weird scenario, isn't it, penalties?
But when the first one's happened, how it's happened, you kind of maybe think, I don't know, does that change the setup then? You'd have to
maybe
be pretty wild for another Man United player to come in and stick it down the middle like that. But I don't know. You look back at the situation, we talked with O'Hare and what he did ahead of the penalty. I'm sure a lot of preparation went into that situation as well. And maybe they've worked out percentages and what's the right thing to do. But it didn't feel great even after that first one. What did you think about the order of the penalties? Who do you think would have taken the fifth if we'd have gotten there?
This one that came up in the crowd. Matty Godden, surely.
You got Sims still, haven't you? But yeah,
Sims,
I kind of
Godden,
lean towards thinking Godden.
It was a bit weird, really. I mean, it's obviously, Cal took the second one, was it? No, third. Sorry, Torp took the second one. Brilliant penalty. Cal third. Yeah. I suppose it was interesting order. And then obviously Sheaf took a really good penalty against Luton last year. And is the sort of player that you would, if someone said to you, Sheaf's going to take one, you go, yeah. Sound like comfortable.
I turned to my friend and said, this is nailed on it. And obviously that's at the point where we'd, for the first time in the shootout, gone behind.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I did say I thought I was nervous for O'Hare, being completely honest.
Yeah, I was a bit as well.
And then I think it was Bruno was after O'Hare, and I said, this is probably nailed on a goal. But I will say, as soon as she's walking up, I kind of, it almost gave me that reassurance. I mean, like, you know, here he is, the captain, walking back up, and we've had a little bit of a little bit of a waver of a bad period here, obviously missing and them taking the lead. But I thought she's not the one to know, you know, obviously not put the ball in the back of the net here, but obviously it's a kick of the ball, isn't it? Anybody in that situation could happen to anybody, and without Ben Sheaf, we don't get to that situation. So as unfortunate as it is, and I'm sure that's what Robbins is making a point when he's running up to talk to him at the end of the game. That's what he's telling him. It's very true. It's easy to say, it's a cliche, whatever else, but without Sheaf, we don't get anywhere near that situation. You look at how 100%. He played against Wolves. He was the best player on the pitch, in my opinion, against Premier League players. In that game, he looked more than at home against Man United. And yeah, we don't get anywhere near that situation without Ben Sheaf. And it's just heartbreaking for him that obviously what happens.
Yeah, it's just like, again, like talk about like momentum swings and different things like that in games. I mean, penalty shootouts are weird, aren't they? The way it can just, you know, we miss one and it's like, it just suddenly swings and it's like, they get theirs. So it's like the pressure's just all on us again. And it's just like such a key moment then. I think the only saving grace to me from this shootout was that they scored to win rather than us missing to lose, if that makes sense. Because I think, you know, that's always how it should be, really. And it was sudden death last year, which was even more crazy, but I'm just glad it wasn't that moment where they all run off celebrating and Sheaf's walking back because he's missed one, which was horrible for Dami last year. But yeah, and obviously, you know, the United players sort of showed their true colours, didn't they, straight after that. Obviously Maguire went straight over, fair play to him, touch of class to kind of console our players, and obviously Anthony decided to just act like a complete prick.
Yeah, that's about as well as you can put it, really. I'm never really, kind of quickly touching on Maguire, the first part, I never got this unreal desire we seem to have in this country to hate Harry Maguire just because a football team decided to spend £80 million on him. I just don't get it. I honestly don't get it. As a, you know, I'm really quite a big England fan as well, and he's never really put too much of a foot wrong for England. He's been in team of the tournaments at major tournaments and been really strong player a couple of World Cups as well, and been really important for us. And you just look at him as a player, and his biggest crime seems to be that he probably isn't worth 80 million, right? Or almost certainly isn't worth 80 million. But why people seem to have this that hatred and everything, I've never understood. But it is a touch of class, but just shows the nature of the guy and Anthony. It's embarrassing more than anything, really. It's embarrassing, isn't it? Why? I mean, you're supposed to be this unbelievable international superstar level footballer, and you decide to do something like that in that moment. How unaware of the situation and the surroundings and your own ability and performance and everything else can you be to make the decision to do that in that moment? It's just, he probably isn't, but he should be embarrassed. And he's a prick.
I suppose you have to take it as a compliment, though, don't we, in a way? Because it's like, you know, I'd said to you like a few years ago, you know, we're going to have a Brazilian international cup in his ears playing for Man United because they just beat us in a penalty shootout and he's that happy about it.
Yeah.
I'd say that. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, that's, it shows how far we've come. And it should, like you said, like people in the media talking about us like we're some pub team. Well, it goes to show that the players on the pitch didn't see us like that and took it pretty seriously. And, you know, obviously, they had sort of, you know, the emotions around it of actually ending up beating us and getting away with it. So I think
they certainly didn't feel like that at the end. Maybe they felt like that a little bit too much in the second half, which is what gave us that opportunity. But we still had to take that opportunity. But certainly by the end, they had absolutely no right or reason to feel like that. So it's embarrassing for him. But you are right. I think as the days and weeks and whatever go on, I don't think it's really sunk into me the fact of, it's hit me that we've lost and we're not going to be in an FA Cup final and we came so close. I don't think it's really hit me we were in an FA Cup semi-final penalty shootout against Man United. I, you know, obviously I'm conscious of that fact, I'm aware of it, but I don't think it's fully hit me what that actually is for our football club quite to the full level, I guess, at the moment is the only way I can say it. I don't think it's really, that situation has really hit me yet.
Yeah, it's like we've absolutely written history. It's like we will remember this for the rest of our lives as COF fans, but because something even like more special nearly happened, we've almost downplaying it in our minds a bit. And like you say, once the dust settles, I think we'll be like, oh, bloody hell, that like seriously was an unbelievable day and won't ever be forgotten. Yeah. Like you say, if it hadn't been for the VAR decision, we just got it back to 3-3 and got it to penalties, would have been, you know, historic. It, you know, it's just because of what it could have been, it just makes you feel a bit funny about it.
And I don't know if this is going to sound bitter. It's really not meant to sound bitter at all. It's meant to, I guess, it speaks to kind of, I guess, the size of the clubs that Man United and Man City are. You know, realistically, they are not going to take as much from winning this tournament as we would have taken from what we've done in the last two rounds of this tournament. It's just impossible for them. And that's... I'm not trying to say because United and City fans are plastic fans. I mean, they've got plenty of them, don't get me wrong, but they've also got true diehard Man United fans. There are true diehard Man City fans who've brought up, ingrained into those clubs, and it means to them what Coventry City means to us. So I'm not trying to make that point at all. The point I'm making is when you, and it kind of goes to the point you made at the start of the podcast around the crowd, and they kind of can rotate the numbers and they're used to it. You just can't, if you're there all the time and you're doing these kind of things all the time, you can't get that same level of passion and enjoyment and pleasure and everything else out of those moments. So it might sound bitter, it might be sound a bit stupid or whatever, but we actually, again, as we probably go a little bit further down the line, might take this in a bit more. What we took from that game on Sunday, and also the Wolves finish and everything else, there's not another club in this country this year in that tournament who will take the same level of joy and pleasure. The only possible one that you could say might have done is a Maidstone, and it's all kind of like goes a bit full circle and it all shows that it's relative, because it's about what you can do in those moments. And as great as it is to win a tournament, winning that tournament means different things for different clubs. So it could have been better for us. I'm not trying to say that as well. Making a final would have been even better. And I don't think we would have, but let's say we somehow would have won the final. That would have been a next level above this. Of course, it could have got better. But
yeah, it's the rarity of it, isn't it? It's the rarity of it. It's like, you know, I don't think I'll see Cardiff play in a semi-final again in my life. I might do, but I don't think it's a realistic possibility. Whereas if you're a United fan or a City fan, you most likely will see them in an FA Cup final. So,
or you win expect the FA it Cup. Most years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's almost an expectation years. For City to win the thing, let alone get to a semi-final or a final, you know, or they want to win the treble. So like you say, it's all relative to your expectations, isn't it? But yeah, I thought obviously the scenes at the end were amazing. You know, obviously the fans stayed behind for a while after the game, clapping the players off, kind of waving the flags. Really good scenes. You know, anyone watching as neutral would have thought we'd have won the game, wouldn't they? Really?
Yeah.
United end emptied out pretty quickly, but it was really nice for the fans to. And it's something I'd said on the last podcast. I hoped we'd give them a really good sort of, you know, clap off the pitch and just for the cup run, for that game, and for the season in general as well. They deserved that like really good reception from the fans, didn't they?
Oh yeah, it's amazing. And you are right, I'm really pleased that everybody stuck around and gave them the reception that they deserved. And I think I said this on Sunday after the game, and again, this isn't really trying to be bitter, but you watch a situation like that, you couldn't pay me to be a Man United fan. And again, it's not really a bitterness, but it's just the experience for us of that versus all the other things that we've done in the last 7 years. you know, it's just unreal, and it's so special to us as a fan base, and it was really important. And that experience of kind of clapping the players off at the end and giving them the reception that they deserved was unreal. They played Country Road as a reward to Man United winning the game, and like before the game, it became a Coventry song more than it was a Man United song, and it was exactly the same at the end. And it was it just showed a lot about football in that game. You know, as I say, there's a good majority of the people in this country and maybe in the world who, for football, the game doesn't really exist past a Premier League or La Liga or certain divisions. And that gave people an insight into how much actually it does exist beyond those levels and how absolutely special it can be. The funny thing, I was watching, I think, one of the games of the top four the other day, the build-up they were talking about, somebody was saying, they're all trying so hard to leave this division. Why? It's amazing. And obviously there was a bit tongue-in-cheek, but I'm kind of going, again, obviously I'd really happily see us make the playoffs and go up at the end of this year, but you kind of go, you know, at a certain point as well, these moments, the unbelievable moments that we get, a lot of them don't happen if we go to the Premier League. Again, I don't want that to come across the wrong way. Happily see us go up at the end of the season or in the next couple of years. But as much of it was a tongue-in-cheek comment, it was actually, there's an element of truth in there, because you say it's just such an amazing thing to be involved in. And it's an amazing football club to be involved in as well, in whatever level that we're all individually involved with it. You know, some people like yourself make it into FA Cup semi-final match day programmes and turn yourself into a bit of a superstar last week. But yeah, it's just... but it's just amazing to be involved in
that is right. It's been incredible, the whole build-up and everything. And obviously, you know, it had to end at some point, whether it was, you know, the semi-final or the final or whatever. But yeah, as we said, incredibly proud of the lads and the club and the team and everything. And the fans were incredible as well on the day. But, you know, I guess now back to the league, which feels a little bit strange to be going back to the league now. And obviously, there's just absolutely no respite whatsoever, because we have to then turn our attention to Hull on Wednesday and then obviously Blackburn on Saturday. You know, it's just four straight games now in very quick succession. I mean, I can believe that it's a week on Saturday that the season finishes, because we've got four games to play. It feels like we should have about 3 or 4 weeks to play them, really, doesn't it? And it's like, oh my God, it's over a week on Saturday. Well, how the earth are we going to do this? But it's going to be a bit of a mad couple of weeks. But, you know, I think the fans have just got to get really behind the team now. And if, you know, as many people get to the CBS as they can and back the lads, and you never know, you know, hopefully some of that spirit from that game can carry us through. I think physically we're going to be tired, clearly, but hopefully we can dig deep in other ways to pull out important performances that we're going to need, Matt.
Yeah, it feels like maybe it could go either way. As much as you have every confidence in Robbins as a manager and his coaching staff and these players to have the right attitude, it's a massive ask, isn't it, coming off the back of this. And I think it's probably a compliment and a testament to them that I'm saying it could go either way, because I think with a lot of clubs, you just have to assume it would be almost impossible for it to go anything other than in a bad way, in a bad direction. But I still think we've got every chance. It wouldn't shock me if we were to turn around against Hull and put in an unreal performance and quite comfortably win. But it could go the other way as well. This is a hard one to get over. So I'm really... I don't know. I think let's just have a go at it, and who knows? I think you mentioned you win those two games in hand. It's 3 points with two games to go. It puts the pressure on, and it's 3 points with two games to go against two teams. So it's not like you're kind of looking at one team and you need them to falter. You've got a couple of options, but we obviously realistically need to win out, which is a big ask. We maybe need one of those two to falter, which is a bit of an ask in itself. It's very unlikely. I think all any fan would ask now is just give it a go, give it your all. But do you know what? If it doesn't end up happening, which it probably won't in terms of making the playoffs, then I'm sure we're all going to look back at this season as a massive positive. And I think everybody's already really quite excited about what could be next year as well.
Yeah, 100%. Plenty to look forward to. And, you know, at Wembley, we're 3-0 down against United, and You know, we all thought it was over, but it wasn't over, Matt. So you never know. You just never know with this football club. Yeah. You never know.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, that's all we've got time for. Thanks for joining me, Matt. That's been a really enjoyable podcast, and it's definitely helped me to get on the road to getting over Sunday. So appreciate you jumping on with me. And listeners, do make sure you're following our partners, Sky Blue Tavern and Dylan's Brewery. And of course, you can always get involved in the conversation. And all you need to do is use the hashtag SBE podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Sky Blues Extra podcast.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.